Chapter 8. A Night at the Opera.
15. Walter Hartwright's narrative continued.
We lived quietly in our new house. Laura was getting better. Now she looked like the Laura I first met at Limeridge. Her expression was lively once more. She smiled frequently, and she had lost that sad, nervous look that made her so very like Anne Catherick. The only thing that had not improved was her memory of the period between her departure from Blackwater Park and her escape from the asylum. She remembered nothing of that painful time. Mr. Curl told us that if she could not remember what had happened to her, we had no hope of proving her identity. During that time, I thought often of Anne Catherick. Some parts of her mother's letter were of particular interest. I had certain suspicions, so I wrote a letter to Mrs. Catherick's old employer, Major Donthorne of Varnick Hall. I asked him some questions about the time when Anne Catherick's mother had worked at his house. This is the reply I received.
Dear Mr. Hartwright, in answer to your questions, I never met Sir Percival Glyde, and he certainly never came to Varnick Hall. Mr. Philip Fairley, however, was a frequent visitor here, and yes, he was here in September 1826. I hope this helps your investigations. Yours truly, Major Donthorne.
Anne was born in June 1827. She was very like Laura, and Laura was very like her father. The conclusion was obvious. I thought of those famous words from the Bible. The sins of the fathers would be visited upon the children. The fatal similarity between two daughters of one father had caused all this suffering. I thought also about Laura's meeting with Anne Catherick by the lake. Anne had said that she wanted to die and to be buried beside Mrs. Fairley. A little more than a year had passed since she had said that, and now her wish had come true. The mystery of the woman in white had finally been solved. I could now say goodbye to the ghostly figure who has haunted these pages as she haunted my life. April came, the month of spring, and things were beginning to change between Laura and me. Throughout her long illness, I had been like a brother to her. Now that she was better, my heart began to beat fast again when she was near me. Our hands began to shake when they met. One day I spoke to Marion. You know that I've loved Laura since the day we met. I want to protect her and fight for her interests with all my strength. I want to marry her so that I'll have the right to protect her. What do you think?
I agree,
said Marion, kissing me on the forehead.
I'll go and speak to her now.
She ran out of the room and I waited, trembling. After a few minutes, Laura ran into the room and threw her arms around my neck.
My darling,
she whispered.
Can we say that we love each other now?
10 days later, we were even happier. We were married. At the beginning of May, I began watching the Count's house. One evening, he got into a cab and told the driver to go to the opera house. I took a cab to my friend Pesca's house and asked him to come to the opera with me. I knew that Pesca had left Italy for political reasons. I also knew that the Count had left Italy many years ago. Perhaps Pesca knew the Count. Perhaps the Count really was a spy in a much more important sense than Laura had intended when she called him by that name. At the opera, I asked Pesca, "Do you recognize that fat man over there?" I noticed that a man close to us was listening with interest to our conversation. He was a thin, blond man with a scar on his cheek.
No,
Pesca replied.
I've never seen him before.
Just then the Count looked up and saw Pesca. The Count's face, which had been happy a few seconds before, was suddenly full of fear. He stood up and quickly left the theatre. We tried to follow him, but the corridors were crowded. I noticed that the man with a scar on his cheek ran through the crowd and followed Fosco out of the theatre. We went to Pesca's apartment. My dear friend, I said, I know you left Italy for political reasons. You told me long ago that you couldn't explain them to me, but this is an emergency. Please help me if you can. You say you don't recognize that man, but he recognizes you, and he's afraid of you. Can you explain why? Pesca got up and walked around the room nervously. After a few minutes of intense thought, he sat down again and said,
What I'm going to tell you now is a secret, and I could be killed for telling it to you. When I was young, I joined a secret political association in Italy, called the Brotherhood. The aim of the Brotherhood is to stop the abuse of power and to maintain the rights of the people. Members murder people who abuse their power. Anyone who joins the Brotherhood must stay in it for his lifetime. Anyone who betrays the Brotherhood will be killed by another member. When I was young, I had passionate political beliefs. Now I'm older, I want to leave the Brotherhood, but I can't. That's why I left Italy and came to live in England as a teacher. Here, I'm of no use to the Brotherhood. Each member of the Brotherhood has a scar like this one on his arm.
Pesca rolled up his sleeve and showed me a small red scar.
I was a leader before I left Italy. This man recognizes me, but I don't recognize him. I haven't changed much over the years, but perhaps this man has. Perhaps he wasn't always so fat. Perhaps he had a beard or different colored hair. One thing is clear. He looked afraid when he saw me. So, he has probably betrayed the Brotherhood. He probably thinks I'm following him so that I can kill him. Listen, Walter, I don't want to have to kill this man. Please tell me nothing about him. If I discover that he has betrayed the Brotherhood, I'll have to act.